And if you would, turn with me to Romans chapter 12 in your Bibles. I bet you're relieved to hear me say something besides the book of Proverbs. Maybe not. Not because it isn't good, it's God's word, but I think we ended up spending about 24, 25 weeks or something in the book of Proverbs, longer than I expected. And I wanted to take this week to kind of get out of Proverbs, but to make a practical lesson in light of what we've been seeing in the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs, remember, talks about food, did a whole message on the wisdom of God in food. We talked about relating to others. We talked about confronting sin in others. And while Proverbs itself never directly deals with this topic for us today, I think a lot in Proverbs would lead us to this thing in the New Testament called hospitality. The women's retreat that Ron mentioned is upcoming. A year ago, the speaker for that women's retreat was yours truly. Yes, I did a women's retreat, being a non-woman. One of the messages of the four for the women's retreat was on hospitality. And so I've been sitting on that topic for a year, knowing that eventually I will not be able to contain myself and I'll need to spill that message or those issues to the whole church. It's an issue that we need, not just women, not just at a women's retreat, not just for some of us. We all need this message of hospitality. So my aim this morning is that we begin to see a culture of hospitality spread at Desert Springs Church. I don't have small aims at all, small intentions at all. This is one of those vision casting messages. This is one of those, here is my heart, Desert Springs, and I want us to follow after that in some ways. I want to see us make hospitality more central to our Christianity, the essence of being Christians. And I want to see hospitality more central or part of the fabric of our whole church, not just our lives individually. So we're going to look at several New Testament passages where we see this first point, hospitality is commanded. I'll give you the point and then we'll go looking in the verses. Hospitality is commanded in the New Testament. Romans 12, and look at verse 9. We'll back up a bit before we get to hospitality and see these pithy little commandments, these pithy little sayings about the Christian life and what it means to be a corporate Christian. Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. Not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality. Hospitality, I think, is part of the fabric that holds all of those things together that we just read, not least the thing right at the beginning, let your love be without hypocrisy. Maybe that should remind us of several places in 1 John where love for brothers and sisters in Christ is brought up, and things like this are said. You can't say that you love your brother when you see him in need and you refuse to do anything about it. Love is hypocritical if it doesn't do anything, if it only says it's love, if it only thinks that it's love. Let love be without hypocrisy means a lot of things like forgiving each other. It means a lot of things like being devoted to one another, giving preference to one another. But it also means practicing hospitality. This word hospitality means literally in the Greek. It's a compound of two Greek words into one Greek word, and it means love strangers. Love strangers. That's a weird concept, isn't it? To love strangers. We think if they're a stranger, you can't love them. You don't know them. Love strangers. But we tell our kids to be afraid of strangers. Don't go with any strangers. And that's good advice to tell our kids. But here, this concept of hospitality tells us that we should love strangers. Now, we'll get to why it says that in a little bit. But just tuck that away, that it has this weird concept, this compound word of two Greek words, meaning to love strangers. Now, not just strangers. Obviously, this includes loving strangers. It means loving strangers, so it has to include actual strangers. But it's not just strangers. It's all over the Bible, all over the New Testament, that this is something you do also with people you know. This is something you do with Christians in your own church. So in that sense, they're not strangers like we normally think of it. Love is the root here. Love is the root, and hospitality is the fruit. It's how the Christian life is to be lived out. It's how that second greatest commandment, to love your neighbor as yourself, is to be lived out. Listen to 1 Timothy 3, verse 2. What are the qualifications for an elder? One of the qualifications for my office, for the other elders here in our church, is that we be hospitable. An overseer must be hospitable. Right towards the beginning of the list of the qualifications given there is that he must be hospitable. He can't be distant from the people. He can't think that he's better than any one of the people. He can't think that his ministry is divorced from his kitchen table. The same qualification is also given for elders in Titus chapter 1, where many of those qualifications are repeated. Interesting, too, is that in 1 Timothy 5, verse 10, widows are said to be put on a certain list in the church, a list of caring for them. There are widows, and they're what Paul calls widows indeed. And these widows indeed are those who really need our attention. Deacons need to give attention to widows, meeting their needs as a widow indeed. Is because in part they have met the needs of others. Because it says, this is who goes on the list of those widows indeed. Let a widow be put on the list if she has shown hospitality to strangers. Isn't that interesting? I wonder what it meant in the first century context as Paul wrote that. Would Paul say, that's a technical widow, and she's a widow indeed in every category except this one? She doesn't do hospitality. Don't put her on the widow's indeed list. Don't give special care, concern, and watchfulness to this widow because she doesn't show hospitality. Now, we don't have to, right now, we don't have the time to go into this whole category of a widow indeed, but it is a biblical category. It's clear there in 1 Timothy 5 and other places, and Paul says part of being a widow indeed, a godly widow that deserves the church's attention and shepherding and care, is that she has shown that care to others. Listen to Hebrews 13. Hebrews 13, verse 1, let love of the brethren continue. Just like Romans 12, verse 9, it starts out with love. Let love of the brethren continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. And then you have this weird thing. For by this, some have entertained angels without knowing it. So what does that mean? I think it means just what it says. It just seems weird. Some haven't realized that in entertaining or being hospitable to someone that looked like a person, they were actually doing it to a messenger of God, an angel. It may be a literal angel like we think of as more of a spirit being in a sense. Or it may be one of his messengers, like a pastor, like a missionary. But regardless, it says we're to show hospitality to strangers, even sometimes without knowing who it is and where they are. Verse 3 says, remember the prisoners as though in prison with them. I think that's part of hospitality. There's a way to show hospitality to prisoners, and it's not by inviting them over to your house. They're locked up. It's by bringing house over to them. It's by bringing food over to them. It's by bringing care and love and fellowship over to them. Remember the prisoners. Go to the prisoners because You yourselves are in the body, and you can imagine yourselves being ill-treated. Now listen to 1 Peter 4. Another big passage on hospitality. Verse 8, above all, keep fervent in your love for one another. Love again, because love covers a multitude of sins. Be hospitable to one another without complaint. That's an important key there, isn't it? Without complaint. It's easy to serve food. It's much harder to serve food and not complain about how hard it is and how no one's thankful around here and those sorts of things. As each one, it says, has received a special gift, a spiritual gift, employ it in serving one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. Whoever speaks, let him speak, as it were, the utterances of God. Whoever serves, let him do so as by the strength which God supplies, so that in all things God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom belongs the glory and dominion forever and ever. Well, these are most of the hospitality verses in the New Testament. Let me give you some quick observations. First, do you realize that the New Testament says more about hospitality than it does about singing? The New Testament says more about hospitality than it does about singing. I like singing. I really like singing. Usually by the second service, I have to kind of talk myself down into singing too loudly so that I have voice left to preach, because I like singing. I like singing as part of our service. We spend a lot of money on having singing around here, on sound systems and musicians and musical gear and things of that sort. It's a big part of our service. In an hour and 20 minutes, we may spend 20, 25 minutes of that time singing together. I'm not saying we should change any of that, but I do think we should at times go countercultural and say, remind ourselves that the New Testament actually says very little about congregational singing, about corporate worship as it is singing. The Bible says a lot more about hospitality than it does about singing. And you think of the way the church today in America, you know, especially 10, 20 years ago, churches that were more traditional and started to go more contemporary had debates in their churches. They called it worship wars. It became a central piece of identifying your church. Are you in this camp? Are you of that camp? Do you still do hymns or do you put them to new music? Do you guys use a drum? Not a drum? Do you use guitars? Do you plug in your guitars? And people left churches over that stuff left and right. Very little is actually said in the New Testament about singing. No one leaves churches because they don't do hospitality so well. No one leaves churches because they haven't heard enough messages on hospitality. No one seems to be concerned today about how to do hospitality. If you go to look for books on the concept of hospitality, you find very few compared with how many are on singing in corporate worship. What else do we observe here? That hospitality is commanded. It's not optional. We'll come back to this later, but let me say it up front. These verses on hospitality are not limited to certain giftedness. They are not limited to certain kinds of people in the church who like to be Martha Stewarts. These verses are not limited to women or to married people or to those with middle income, bracket, or those with a decent house or those with a clean house. It's not limited to those. This command is not limited to those who feel like their spiritual gift is hospitality. That's not what it meant in 1 Peter 4 when it says, whoever's received a gift, let him employ it serving one another. That doesn't negate the verse right before about how you keep fervent in your love towards one another, which is partly hospitality. As he goes on to talk about specific gifts after the word hospitality, you can't miss that the fact hospitality here is used as a way in which every Christian keeps their love for each other fervent and keeps it going. Another thing we see is that concept at least in Romans 12, verse 13, where it says practicing hospitality. Practicing hospitality means it's ongoing. The Greek word for practicing there has the concept of both practicing it, which means you're not always good at it. You're trying to improve on it. You're being strategic with it. But not just practicing it, also pursuing it. Some translations say pursue hospitality. Some translations there say practice hospitality. Really, the concept is there of both those words in one Greek word, that you are pursuing hospitality and practicing hospitality. A big part of both of those words is that it's ongoing. It's habitual. It's not make sure you practice hospitality once a year. Make sure you do one big hospitality party once a year. It's a way of life. All right, let's get to the second point then. The second thing to think about is that hospitality has a rich significance in Scripture. It has a rich significance, a rich history in Scripture. You back up to Adam and Eve in the garden. Before Eve, there's Adam and he's alone. And God says it's not good for Adam to be alone. What does that tell us? It tells us we were made for a wife. It tells us we were made for a spouse. We were made for each other. Yes. But on a broader level, it tells us we were made for companionship. We were made for community. We were made for each other. It's not good for any of us to be alone, and you could apply that to families. It's not good for families, one single family, to be alone. They need other families. It's not good for one Christian family to be its own little Christian family church. You need other Christian families. We were made for community, and we were made for food. Those go together in hospitality. You were made for other people, and you were made for food. You don't quite hunger after other people as often as you hunger after food, but if you were on a deserted island, it wouldn't take you very long to just feel lonely, to feel like you need to talk to somebody. I mean, you've seen the Tom Hanks movie where he's stranded on an island. He starts talking to a volleyball. He starts making friends with Wilson because he needs companionship. He isn't made to be alone. Ecclesiastes says that the family table is the essence of what we're to do. Once we realize the futility in the world, where we try to get this and be satisfied and know it doesn't satisfy, it was like grasping after the wind. After all that, once you realize that satisfaction can't be fully gotten down here and must be received through God with Him, then all of a sudden things don't disappear from our lives, but they can be enjoyed as what they were made to be, as an expression of God's gifts to us. Food, the dinner table, the family around that table, Ecclesiastes says, is central to doing what God has made us to do when we realize it's not ultimate. Your dinner table is not ultimate. And that's no surprise to you, right? That's no surprise to you. Right now, Sarah and I were just talking about this. Our kids are in a spell. I'll say in this service because they're not in this service. Our kids are in this spell right now where they're dominating conversation at the dinner table. And every sentence begins with, "You know what?" "No, what?" And then it's a story, and then amplification of that story, and then retelling that story, and no, that's not how it was this, and then, craziness. And so we're working on, Sarah and I, getting the reins back of our dinner table and letting kids watch us actually talk without beginning every sentence, "Do you know what?" I was trying to show them, what if on the news every story began with, "And you know what? Cockfighting is still illegal." You know, it wouldn't be good. So the point is, you know, your dinner table is not ultimately satisfying. But Ecclesiastes says it is satisfying. It is where life is lived. It is where life happens. Where conflict happens sometimes. Where parental leadership happens sometimes. But it is where life happens. You could almost say that the story of God's plan can be charted in meals. Now, the big ones are the feasts of the Old Testament, the Lord's Supper, which Jesus gives for the church to celebrate together. we even have at the very end another meal in heaven. There'll be the marriage supper of the Lamb, the final meal, maybe an ongoing eternal meal. Whatever it is, God's plan often comes to us, is revealed to us in meals. Not least Jesus. When Jesus comes to earth, he comes to earth eating. They're surprised, right, that God would eat. And not just eat, but he would eat with what? Sinners. And he would be a servant? That he would be a servant to them. Remember, when they're preparing for one of the meals, Jesus grabs the basin of water and goes around and washes the disciples' feet. A sure sign of what he said elsewhere. I didn't come to be served, I came to serve. But he's also a recipient of hospitality. He also eats with Mary and Martha. Throughout Luke, when he eats meals with any sinner, it's a big deal. It's a surprise. Because in Jesus' culture, in first century times, eating a meal with someone was very significant. It meant things were okay between us. It was a sign of peace. It was an extension of life and peace and relationship between those people. That's why it's shocking to them when they see Jesus eating with tax collectors and harlots and sinners. Now remember that word, hospitality, that it's two Greek words put together into one, and it means love strangers. The verb is love strangers. Why strangers? Well, Christine Pohl has written a book a few years back called Recovering Hospitality as a Christian Tradition. It's an academic book, a lot of archaeology, a lot of digging. Wouldn't be of much interest to many of you, but there's an article by Christine Pohl on our website that you can look at and get the Reader's Digest version. But one of the things that Christine Pohl says in this great book is that God has made room for us as strangers. The hospitality tradition goes back this far. We were aliens and strangers, and God has welcomed us into his home. He has shown us hospitality. That's what 1 Peter 2:11 calls us, aliens and strangers. Show love to the strangers. Does that mean people you don't know? Yeah, it does. It does. Because God extends his love universally. God's love crosses boundaries that we can't even imagine in scope, in nation, in geography. But his love comes to Christians. His love comes to those who now in the New Testament are called aliens and strangers. And so our loving strangers can mean real strangers, or it can mean 1 Peter 2:11 strangers. They're aliens and strangers in this world, and like God has welcomed us as wanderers in the desert into his home, so now we welcome others, whether literal strangers or whether fellow Christian wanderer strangers, aliens like us, we welcome them into our home. We extend care and we extend love to them because the whole story begins with that. God came to wanderers, strangers, aliens in this world, and welcomed them in. Those who are weary, you who are weary and heavy laden, come unto me and I will give you rest. That's a great picture, isn't it? And because God has practiced that kind of hospitality to us, because God has shown that kind of love to us, we show that kind of love to others. Doesn't it remind you of Matthew 25? Remember the separating of sheep and goats? In verse 35, Jesus says, as he's portraying himself as a king, I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. The righteous will say, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you? When were you thirsty and we gave you something to drink? And he'll say, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me. As you have extended hospitality to others, you may have extended hospitality to one of my messengers. You may have unknowingly extended hospitality to an angel. And as you've done it to my people, to brothers and sisters in Christ, you have done it unto me, he says. Mind-blowing words if you're not familiar with them. The shock wears off eventually and we're used to these words. But it's shocking that Jesus says, when you feed, clothe, give drink, provide shelter for the least of them, you did it to me. So that he could even say, I was hungry. I was out there. I needed shelter. I was cold and unclothed. In Acts chapter 2, we see the early church described like this. Verse 44, all those who believed were together and had all things in common. They shared things. That doesn't mean a Christian communism. What it means is they met each other's needs with the own goods that they had. They saw a need and it was a no-brainer. Keep this for myself or maybe sell it and be able to meet that need. I'd be glad to do that. Your need is my need. These are our shared needs, not our shared goods, but our shared needs whereby our individual goods can meet these needs. They had these things in common. And in verse 46, it says, day by day, they were continuing with one mind in the temple, breaking bread from house to house. They were taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart. Does that mean every meal was church meal? Every meal was a potluck? That stinks. Some potlucks aren't good. Well, that's not what it's saying here. Not every single meal, but often they shared meals together. How often have you shared a meal with a fellow Christian in the last year? 3 John in verse 8 shows us another angle to this. It says that we ought to support such men. And I think by support, it means show hospitality to. And I think in the context, such men means missionaries, those who are traveling, preachers, whatever you'd want to call them. We ought to show hospitality to missionaries and preachers. Here's the interesting thing, so that we may be fellow workers with them in the truth. What does that mean? That means that your job may not be to preach, but to feed the preacher. It may mean that your job is not to go on a mission field, but to care for those who will go on the mission field when they're home or by sending stuff to them, showing love to them while they're out there. Hospitality has a rich significance in Scripture. From the beginning to the end, it is multifaceted, it is full of biblical theology, and it's full of purpose. Thirdly, hospitality runs against the grain of culture and sin. We should own up to this. Hospitality runs against the grain of ourselves, and it runs against the grain of our society around us. Our American culture, I'm sure you've noticed, is not very conducive to practicing hospitality or to being communal or something like that. According to a book by Robert Putnam called Bowling Alone. A great title. Who bowls alone? That's lonely. That sounds like the beginning of a bad cowboy song. He says this: there's an undeniable evidence that today's American culture is considerably less interested in community and friendship. He says in the last 25 years, here's some stats, having social evening with someone from your neighborhood, a social evening over at your house, whether it's ice cream or coffee or a meal or you're lighting off fireworks, I suppose. That's down 33% in the last 25 years. Family dinners in general, just when the whole family actually meets up together, that's down 33% in the last 25 years. Having friends over to your home is down 45% in the last 25 years. From 1985 to 1999, the readiness of the average American to make new friends declined by 33%. Now, how many of you would say you're a suburbanite? I am. My hand's up. Raise your hand. Let's just see. How many of you would say, if you're not a suburbanite, that means you live downtown or you live on the other side of the mountain in a more rural setting. You live in Rio Rancho on this patch of dust out there, which would be great. There'd be some great dirt biking out there. I'd love to do that maybe someday. But I'm a suburbanite right now. How many of you, let me see a hand, are suburbanites? Most of us. It's harder for us. It's hard in our American culture as it is. It's hard to be communal, whether you are in a rural community and people do tend to kind of help each other out more quickly, or whether you're in an urban community where care about community happens pretty quickly and easily. People do interact because they're so closely living together, they do bump up against each other a lot more than we do in our suburbanite contexts. Think about that. That doesn't mean move. Just realize that if you're doing what everyone around you is doing in a suburbanite context, and you bring that MO to church, we will never do church. We will never be the church. We'll never do what we're supposed to do. We'll never do hospitality like we're supposed to do hospitality. At the end of the day, though, it's not the culture that causes us to not be hospitable, to not practice hospitality. It's sin. We don't love, we don't serve, we don't care, we don't invite over like we should because we're selfish. There's a great book by Alexander Strock. We use his stuff on church government, biblical eldership. He has a book, a small little 60-page booklet called The Hospitality Commands. We have these available at the Resource Center today for $5. They're great things. Let me just give you a bit. He says, at heart, we are all selfish. And selfishness is the single greatest enemy of hospitality. We do not want to be inconvenienced. We do not want to share our privacy or our time with others. We are consumed with our personal comforts. We want to be free to go about our business without interference or concern for other people's needs. We don't want the responsibility and work that hospitality entails. We are greedy and don't want to share our food, our home, our money. We are afraid that we will be used or that our property will sustain damage. I find that true. I find that true in my own heart sometimes, where I like to protect time. I like to protect the sanity of our home. I like to keep things as much in control as possible. That's sin. And it's sin that particularly bumps up against hospitality. What keeps us really from serving and loving is our own selfishness. We're selfish about time or money or our stuff or just order and predictability or wanting more ease because we're stressed out and people will just add to it. And so I just need to chill in front of the TV and not be around people, especially ones that I can't tell what to do, especially kids that I can't tell what to do. Because they're not my own. The fourth thing here is that hospitality needs to be understood for what it is and what it's for. Maybe the problem is that this isn't preached on enough in churches, that it's a neglected topic in general. Maybe the problem is culture. Maybe for sure the problem is sin. But maybe for some of us, we just don't know what it is and we don't know what to do or how to do it. And we've never been taught in these ways about hospitality. So let's talk about what it is and what it isn't. Here's my definition. It is warmly and lovingly welcoming others into our home and or into our lives. It is welcoming others into our home or into our lives. It sometimes involves food, but it doesn't have to involve food. Sometimes it involves care. Sometimes it involves nurture. Sometimes it involves confrontation. But it always shows love. It's rooted in love. And so it warmly and lovingly welcomes others. That's the key to hospitality. That's why hospitality business is all about welcoming people, isn't it? If you think that someone's in the hospitality business, you think hotel. What do? They welcome you. They take care of you. They meet your needs. That may involve food. It may involve shelter. But the root of it is welcoming with warmth and love into your life. Remember that the Greek word for fellowship means sharing. Sharing. So this is sharing life with others. Hospitality means sharing life, living life with others. So it kind of overlaps with what fellowship is. It kind of overlaps with what unity is in the New Testament and what it means to love each other in the New Testament and what it means to care for each other in the New Testament. It can be, let's talk about food, it can be a fancy meal, but it sure doesn't have to be. Hospitality isn't showing your stuff off. Hospitality, let me say that again, especially ladies. Hospitality is not about showing your stuff off. Your new decorating, your new pillows, your new plates, your new drinks, your organization, your new apron. I know no one shows off a new apron except my wife. She likes aprons. I don't know if she shows them off, but I like it when she has one on. It's cute. But let me get back to food unless I go back to last week. And that would be a big detour. It doesn't have to be fancy food. In fact, Sarah just said to me this week that she's found that simple, hearty food for guests is usually better than anything fancy because, even with new guests, or especially with new guests, because it puts them at ease. If you make it too fancy, people feel uptight. Use simple, hearty food to extend love and to provide a time of fellowship with other Christians, with other people who can't meet their own needs sometimes. It's not limited to those with big houses or nice houses or a lot of extra money or a lot of extra time. Maybe you do need to free up some of your budget money to leave more for hospitality because you feel like, man, it's a tight squeeze to pay for our own food, let alone for anyone else's. I understand that. But if there are ways in which you can cut other places to provide money so that you can invite others to be with you, even with your meager meal, you should do it and obey the Bible. You need maybe to free up some time. Maybe overtime work is infringed in your life, or maybe some of your hobbies have infringed and you need to cut out some overtime work or cut out some hobbies so you'd have some time for other people during the week or on weekends. Maybe you have more money than time. We've been there sometimes where it's like we have no time and money isn't, you know, flowing out of our pockets. I didn't go into the ministry to have money flowing out of my pockets, obviously. But we could pay for us going out to a restaurant. If you have more money than time, maybe it isn't about getting together for a meal at your house where you make the food. Maybe you bring the food in from Boston Market or pizza or whatever. It can be with a clean house, and it can be and often should be when the house isn't just right. If you wait for your house to be just right in order to have company in it, then you will have less company in it than you should. There's just no way around it. If you are not ready for people to see your house with some modicum of chaos going on, then they will never see your house. Unless somehow the millennium has touched down on your little house and you know, the birds, like in Cinderella, they're actually helping you clean or something. I don't think anyone here is doing that. So I think we have to get used to letting others see our real lives. Our real lives. It's a motive issue. Let me say this about cleaning. It can be selfish for you to not clean before company. Because there is a way in which the atmosphere is part of hospitality, and it is a way in which you speak love to them, that you care for them. If George W. Bush was coming over for dinner, I bet you'd find the time to just straighten up some things. So don't think cleaning is just out the window. Who cares? Who needs it? Don't. Ryan said so. You don't have to clean anymore. I'm saying there's a way in which you can selfishly not clean, and there's a way you can selfishly clean, where cleaning isn't a way of providing a happy atmosphere to those that you want to show love to, but is a way in which you show off your goods, show off your order, show off your abilities. It can be planned far in advance, or it can be last minute. And if you never do the last minute kind of hospitality, here's a question. Are you meeting specific needs that are being presented to you on the spot? If you only plan your hospitality weeks or months in advance, then no doubt you are missing opportunities that get presented to you like this, where you can meet a need, you can extend an invitation. If you only do planned hospitality, never last minute hospitality, are you really inviting people into your life? Or are you inviting them into a make-believe, in a sense, part of your life? Sometimes hospitality involves feeding the hungry. Sometimes they're real strangers. They're real wayward people. They are real wanderers. They're homeless people. Let me ask you, do you only invite those over to your house who are just like you? Do you only invite those over to your house who you know also turn around and will do the same back? Have your kids ever experienced the joy and awkwardness and just downright interesting part of having a homeless person who hasn't showered in days there at the table with you? I mean, can your kids get that, relate to it, and not be weird about it? Get there. Find out how to do it. Yes, be protective of your home. Be careful. Yes, be wise. But don't be so wise that you only care for those who look just like you. With the poor, it might not be that they're homeless, but you're showing hospitality to someone who's maybe young and single and poor, a college student who you know is eking by. A meal, a homemade meal to a college student who's away from home is a glorious thing. Or maybe it's a young married couple, very young, very poor, like us when I was in seminary. Our first year of marriage, we made $12,000. Our second year of marriage, we made $15,000. But we had a family in Virginia, the Siemens. Ron and Tracy Siemens. It was actually our connection in us knowing Desert Springs, because Ron was an elder here at Desert Springs when you were looking for a preaching pastor. We knew them back now 12 years ago in Virginia. And Ron's kind of a big spender. If you know Ron, he's big and a big spender. And his whole motto is live life large. So everything's large about Ron. Large steaks, large trips, large everything, large body, large voice. And he would spoil us rotten. We would go over to their house for great meals. He would take us out to fancy restaurants. We would say, Ron, there's no way we can afford to go. And, you know, we're not the kind who would just assume he's going to pay because he makes more than we do or anything like that. We would want to maybe offer to pay, but we don't want to get ourselves in a bind where it was $80 and he says, okay, yeah, I'll take some money this time. Oh, well, actually... But he took care of us. In the midst of us eking by to eat for most of our meals, we also had these glorious vacations, steak dinners, nice restaurants. And it doesn't have to be fancy. Ron's MO is fancy. Your MO doesn't have to be fancy, but it can just be home cooked. And that is great to a young couple who's living on $12,000 and is so sick of potatoes. Or maybe they're not young at all, but they're still poor. And with the poor, get this, with those who are financially struggling, when you have them over to your house and you extend hospitality to them, when you provide them a meal, this is such a multifaceted need that you're meeting. Here's what's going on. You're not only obeying hospitality and doing hospitality, which Jesus says is what the church should do. It should be the fabric of the church, and it's how love keeps going. It's how love is shown. It's how love is not hypocritical. But it's not just that. It's also that you are meeting a real concrete need in this person's life. This is one less meal that they'll have to come up with. And for some who are struggling, that matters. And not only that, you are communicating your love, your care, and your burden bearing with them amidst some hard times for them. Because if you've been there, you know when you can't pay the bills and you wonder sometimes how you're going to eat, those are hard times. Those are stressful times. Those are tear-filled times. And when you communicate love and care to someone who's in that position, then you indeed do many good things. Sometimes hospitality is with old friends, and sometimes it's with new acquaintances. Remember, hospitality is love strangers. Sometimes that's a stranger who's a fellow stranger Christian with you. You are strangers and pilgrims and aliens in this world until we meet our home in heaven. And sometimes they are literal strangers. They're literal wanderers. Sometimes you don't know them. You just meet a need. Sometimes you might be tempted to give money to someone on the street, and then you struggle. Should I? Are they going to spend it on drugs? Are they going to spend it on booze? I don't know. Will work for food. He really won't work. Should I give him money anyway? I don't need anything done. I don't want to supervise him in the backyard. I don't want to hire him for work. I don't want to give him money, but I want to do something. Have him over for a meal. Have him over for a meal. Now, if he's going to spend money that you would have given him on booze or drugs, he doesn't want to go to your house, probably. He isn't interested. But if you walk up to a guy holding a sign who says that he's hungry, and you say, "You're hungry? I'll get you a meal." He said, "Well, I don't want to bring him to my house." All right. Then you take them out to a restaurant right then. Take him out to a restaurant. Get him some food. Show hospitality. It isn't just with our best friends that we do this. It isn't just with our closest family members that we do this. It's not just with those who will pay us back. Yet, it doesn't mean that you try to get to be best friends through hospitality with everyone. One of the things about hospitality, one of the things I think we worry about as a church as we do fellowship, as we try to love each other, is we feel bad sometimes that we have some friends that are closer than others. Don't. You should extend the fingers of your hospitality to reach new people all the time, but use Jesus' model as an example where he did have different levels of pursued intimacy. There was the multitude. There were all those experiences of one-on-one encounters like the woman at the well. There were the 12 disciples that were around with him for years. Very intimately. And then of the 12, there were 3 who definitely seemed to be the most closest. Peter, James, and John do things with Jesus and hear things from Jesus that the rest don't. Be okay with different spheres of intimacy in your lives. Some are projects. Some hospitality candidates are projects, and it means many years investment in them. Some are more work than others. And you need relationships in your life. You need Christian relationships, and you need opportunities to show hospitality to people who are, on the one hand, work, who test your patience, who are difficult, who are taxing, who wear you out, where it means that giving is sacrifice and meals with these people, this person is serving. Well, remember 1 Peter 4. Remember 1 Peter 4, if you're going to serve, serve in the strength that God provides so that when you find strength to serve like that, who gets the glory? You? Him. It's okay to be on that edge of, this is really tough. This is really work. I'm not doing this purely out of I just can't help it motives. I'm doing this because I think it's right, but it's hard. Do it in the strength that God provides. And when you love them, and usually I found this, dinners with people where I think it's going to be work, but I do it anyway. At the end, I'm not so sure it was that much work, and I'm not so sure that the blessing wasn't mine after all, right? I mean, how many times you get together with people other than maybe your family at Christmas or something like that, but usually you get together with people and you're not sorry you did it. You're not sorry you spent the time. You're not sorry you even made the meal. But on the other hand, you need those relationships which get you recharged. You need those relationships in your life, in your lives where getting together with them is refreshing and it's joyful and there's a lot of laughter and it's good and it's godly and you need those people in your lives. There's a lot more we could say on this point, a lot of practical things that we could say on this point, but let's end it with this, the fifth point, fostering a culture of hospitality at Desert Springs Church. What do we do from here? What do we do other than we just go about looking for people to invite over to our homes or invite into our lives? What do we do beyond that? Well, keep in mind that this is a significant way in which you begin to spread the gospel with non-Christians. So don't just think of it in terms of church fellowship. Invite someone over from my home group to get to know them better. That's not bad. It's not wrong. That is hospitality. But think of hospitality, too, in terms of, excuse me, got an itchy throat. Think of it in terms of what it can mean for non-Christians in your neighborhood or non-Christians that you work with. Maybe before you ever get to the gospel, you've had many meals together. Hearing the gospel and giving the gospel when you have that kind of foundation is oftentimes a lot easier. Invite people in your neighborhood or at your work over. You say, people out there, you live in a church bubble, Ryan, because people out there don't do that. You don't just invite someone you barely know out there in the world. You don't invite them over for dinner. They think you're weird. I know. Isn't that the point? Isn't that part of the point? Part of the point is to communicate to them love that's different than the world's. That we have a relationship system that isn't based on give and take and protecting my comforts and my wants. It's caring for people and investing in them, even if it means I invite someone over who turns out to be awkward or has a gas problem because you fed them cheese and you didn't know they couldn't digest it. We so protect our lives and the world does around us, and so if we lived lives that didn't look so protected, they may actually think that what we say might be true. Hospitality leads eventually to love, and it leads to friendship, real friendship. It leads to trust. Think of that in terms of when you need to confront sometimes. We talked in Proverbs about confronting, confrontation of sin, getting it and sometimes having to give it. It's a New Testament concept as well. It's part of what the church does. It gets confrontation and it gives confrontation sometimes as that's biblical. And oftentimes that's not received well. But it would almost always be better received if you had a foundation of meals with that person upon which you stood. This is how we are to be the church. I want you to think about not just what it means for your family to be more hospitable, to do hospitality, to pursue it and to practice hospitality. I want you to join me in thinking of how we can promote hospitality better at Desert Springs Church. And I don't mean through a ministry. I dinner ministries or things like that, those aren't wrong. That is hospitality, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the more organic stuff. I'm not talking about home groups. I'm not talking about let's set up 9 more home groups. In some ways, dare I say it, home groups exist because hospitality at this church doesn't. If hospitality were happening and you were in people's lives and people's lives were in yours, we wouldn't need necessarily to set up formal structures of these 10 people go to this house every Wednesday night. It's not wrong. I'm glad we do it. But I'd like to see more of the natural stuff start to spread. And hospitality is catchy. As you get into it, as you start to do it, as you start to bring others in on it, it will spread. One specific way that love for others and a desire to be in each other's lives, like the New Testament talks about, and the willingness to obey God in doing hospitality, one way that will manifest itself here is when visitors come to our church for the first Sunday, and the majority of the time, those visitors are asked over for lunch right afterwards. The point of my message this morning has this fine point to it at the end. This is really central to what I wanted to talk to you about this morning. When visitors come to our church, they not only should be welcomed, they not only should be helped, and that's part of hospitality. We should show them that we care in real ways, not just superficial ways. Not just business-like ways. Not just we want to be a nice church sort of way. We want to show love and care for them. And how can we do that? We've got to get to know them. Where can we get to know them? What are you doing right afterwards? You're eating? So am I. What a coincidence. Let's do that together. Come on over. This was part of the church culture in evangelical churches in England. We lived there for a time, and we were blown away by what was a given, that there's someone new. Not only you'll meet them, not only ask them what they do and who they are and what they're about and how long they've lived here, ask them over for a meal. Ask them over for dinner that night. I have a vision that we do this here. I have a vision that we will be better at this here. Remember in Revelation 2-3, the 7 churches, Jesus writes letters to 7 churches, and he says, this is what you're doing good, this is what you're doing bad. This is something we don't do well here. This is something we don't. I could hear Jesus say to the church at Desert Springs in Albuquerque, you love theology. You love your home group. You love this, you love that. But this I have against you. Remember that phrase Jesus keeps using when he wants to point something out of a rebuke to these churches. But this I have against you. And I feel like the Lord would say to us, because visitors do say this to us, I have this against you. Despite all those good things, I have this against you. You do not feel quite warm to those who you do not know well. And I'm not good at it either. But we can do better on this. We should do better on this. And by God's grace, we will. Pursue hospitality, practice it, do it because hospitality has been shown to you. Jesus came, an alien and stranger for us, to, by his blood and redemption, bring us into God's house. Now that love and hospitality needs to be shown to others.